Van Shakapatubias Cha, Kripa Sindhu Vaye Vacha, Patitaram Pabinebio, Vaishnavebio Namo Nama. Now, as we're passing the papers, usually I would ask if you remember something from yesterday's class. Raise your hand, think for a moment, which is always good to do. There's an old Confucian saying. One of Confucius's disciples. You know Confucius? Chinese. Something like sadhu. One of his disciples said, one of the Duke of Wen, is so careful that he thinks three times before speaking. And Confucius replied, two times is sufficient. A gentleman, Prabhupada said, thinks twice before speaking. So, okay, think once about if you remember anything from the class yesterday, especially the verses. Raise your hand if you remember something. Yes, Paul. Yes. Govindaya namo nama. Very wonderful verse. Because Krishna is being glorified and he is being offered obeisances in relationship to his devotees. So who is pleased by that? Krishna is especially pleased. And therefore, when we say, we also, anarpitam chiram chirat kuranya vatil, how does that verse end? With obeisances to whom? Satchinandan. Yes. Because if we call Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in relationship to his mother, when he thinks of his mother, Satchimat, his heart melts. And when his heart is melted, his compassion is deeply present. And then we hope that the river of his merciful compassion will flow to us. So it is very, very practical to glorify Krishna in relationship to his beloved devotees. So Nanda Gopa Kumaraya, Govindaya Namo Nama. Very practical. But these are obeisances, because prior to that, Kunti Devi has said, Katam Pashemi Histriya, what is the hope for me? She says, what is the hope for me to have bhakti implanted in my heart by your mercy? And what is the symptom of bhakti in the heart is that one is attracted to hear the messages of Krishna. One is attracted to Krishna. Because now, Krishna bule se jeev anadiya bahimukh. We have our back turned on Krishna. Our back turned towards Krishna. And the process of bhakti is to turn around towards Krishna. To turn ourselves towards Krishna. And then become a loving devotional service from bahimukh to samukh. To be with Krishna. So Kunti Devi is saying, she says, Katam Pashemi Histriya, what is the hope for me? And therefore, in the next two verses, beginning with Krishnaya Vasudevaya, and then going to Namo Pankajanabhaya, Pankajamalane, garland of lotus flowers. So in those two verses, the hope is to offer obeisances practically speaking, because when we offer obeisances, we're asking for mercy. We are subjugating ourselves, putting ourselves beneath that one whom we are offering obeisances to. And Prabhupada even mocked somehow, he made fun of how sometimes we say, "Oh Prabhu," when someone says, "Oh Prabhu," you know they're going to ask you to do something. He made fun of that. But Prabhu means master. Master means I'm your servant. And that is the Vaishnava culture. That is Trinadapi Sunichena, Turodapi Sihisina, Manina, Manadena. And that is the qualification for Kirtaniya Sadahari. So Kunti Devi immediately responds to the question she herself asks, as how can I know you? How can we know you? Because you are meant to give, to attract those who already have pure hearts, the Amala Atmanam, the Paramahansas, the great Munis, she's saying. And Prabhupada in the purport following Srila Sridhar Swami says that these people, it is indirectly saying that these persons, they actually don't have any qualification to see Krishna, because it is only by Krishna's mercy that we have access to him. We can try our best, but it is only by his mercy. So after offering her obeisances, first as Krishnaya Vasudevaya, and then as Krishna, that transcendental Lord who appears in this world but actually has nothing to do with this world. Sambhavam Yatma Mayaya. He comes by his Atma Maya, by his internal energy. And Atma Maya also means by his mercy. He comes to display his pastimes. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya tadaskritam, to protect the devotees. There is a question that Prabhupada asks in the teachings of Queen Kunti about this verse, paritranaya sadunam, to protect the devotees, to protect the sadhus. If they are sadhus, a sadhu means one who is beyond this material world. So what type of protection do they need? He asks that question. So why does Krishna come? What type of protection does he offer the sadhus? And the answer Prabhupada gives, he takes away their suffering, the suffering of their separation from him. So he comes specifically for that purpose, to give himself to the sadhus who are crying and crying and crying with tears pouring from their eyes, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And this is the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. From the moment, practically speaking, that Mahaprabhu took sannyas in Chaitanya Bhagavat, it is described. Then, excuse me, not sannyas, but after he took diksha, after he took initiation from Sri Ishwara Puri, the only words that came from his mouth were, "Where is Krishna Chandra? Where is Krishna Chandra? Where is Krishna Chandra?" And once he was with Gadadhar Pandit, and he said, "Where can I find Krishna?" And Gadadhar Pandit said, "Krishna is in your heart." And Mahaprabhu immediately began ripping at his heart. And Gadadhar Pandit made Mahaprabhu peaceful and said, "Don't worry, don't worry." A very soothing, sweet personality. "Don't worry, be patient." And Mother Sati was so pleased with him. She said, "You should always stay with my boy. You should always stay with him, because you and no one else can make him peaceful." So if Mother Sati says, you always stay with my boy, then what problem will we have? So therefore the devotees, they chant Jai Satchinandana, they chant Nittai Gauranga, they chant Krishnaya Vasudevaya, or Hare Krishna even, all the names of Krishna in relationship with his devotees to evoke the mercy of the Lord when he thinks about himself in relationship to his beloved devotees. So after Kunti Devi, the scribes offers her obeisances in these two ways, then she begins to describe the distresses that she has gone through. And she describes how Krishna, in every case, saved them. And this is typically what is on a devotee's mind, whether we think about it so consciously or not. There is such a tendency to want to remove the distresses of this material world. So Kunti Devi explains, O Rishikesh, master of the senses and lord of lords, you have released your mother Devaki, who is long imprisoned and distressed by envious King Kamsa. And you have released me and my children from a series of constant dangers. And Prabhupada, in his purport, explains that Kunti's position was even more precarious and difficult than Devaki's position, because Devaki was put into trouble by Kamsa, and after some time she was released. And also she still had her husband to protect her. But Kunti, no husband, and calamity after calamity, distress after distress, difficulty after difficulty. And then in the next verse, so her situation was even more difficult than Devaki's. Prabhupada explains this in the purport, and also Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the same point. And then some specific examples she gives in the 24th verse, her prayer, and then we know these from the Mahabharata. Your lordship has protected us from the poison cake. Who did she protect from the poison cake? Bhim. From a great fire, the house of lack. From cannibals, meaning man-eaters, that was the Hadimbi demon. From the vicious assembly where they tried to disrobe Draupadi. And Krishna so carefully protected Draupadi. Bhima was ready to kill everyone. And Yudhisthira was very peaceful. You protected us from sufferings during our exile in the forest and from the battle where the great generals fought. Which battle was that? Kurukshetra. Because Krishna had promised that each and every one of Kunti's sons would survive. And practically speaking, they were the only survivors, them plus a few more. And now, she says, you have saved us from the weapon of Aswatthama. So this is generally Chatur Vidha Bhajante Mam Jana Sukritino Arjuna Artha Gigyasi Artha Ti Gyani Cha Bharata Sabha. So this is how the Sukritinas, why the pious persons tend to take shelter of Krishna. And the prime reason is out of distress. Now, Srila Jiva Goswami makes a distinction in Bhakti Sandarbha of two ways to go to Krishna out of distress. One way, which is very much a lesser way, is when we're in difficulty and the main thing we want is to get out of difficulty. And this is such a tendency, because when one is in pain, all one tends to think of is how to remove the pain. But this is not Shuddha Bhakti. Another type of distress, of wanting to get out of distress, is wanting to take shelter of Krishna. And that's the prime thing. Knowing that the very nature of this material world is distress. Almost similar in one sense. One is wanting to go to Krishna, and the other is wanting to escape from distress, though. And even going to Krishna, there's no pain in Goloka Vrindavan. There are no financial difficulties in Goloka Vrindavan. There's no this, there's no that. I want to go there. It sounds even better than getting a green card to the United States. But that will not get us there. That will get us liberation. And to understand the actual mood of a devotee who sees the distresses of the material world and he sees those as Krishna's mercy, just pushing him and pushing him. Because the tendency, clearly, the tendency in this world for us conditioned souls, for we conditioned souls, is to want to make a comfortable position for ourselves. Such a deep tendency. And that, of course, is impossible. Because how could one be peaceful in a place that it is known as Martyaloka? How could you be comfortable knowing that you're going to die and that everyone you love is going to die? And in 100 years from now, which isn't a very long time, out of the 6 billion people who are on this planet now, including all of us in this room, how many of us will still be on this planet? The youngest, the oldest, most likely very, very, very few will still be here in one short 100 years. So we can be comfortable here. But yet, the devotees don't care on the deepest level. When they are very deep, they don't care about the distresses of this. How is that possible? We can say it's wonderful and devotees think like that, but practically speaking, when the mind is in distress, how is it possible to not care about that distress? And the only way it is possible is if we learn the art of holding tightly to the lotus feet of Krishna and feeling perfectly secure in that and knowing that we are with Krishna and feeling the sweetness of and the security of being with Krishna, then the distresses actually will appear insignificant. They will appear very, very small in size. One time, Prabhupada, after he had a heart attack while he was in New York, the devotees were in his room. And suddenly, in the hospital room, and suddenly he sat up. He was lying down. And he sat up and went, Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. He began chanting. And the devotees asked him, Prabhupada, what had happened? Then Swamiji, what had happened? Why did you sit up suddenly and start chanting? He said, oh, I thought I was going to die. And also, around that time, The devotees asked him what the meaning of surrender was. Because surrender, that sharanagati, the return to our natural shelter, which is holding on fully to Krishna's lotus feet, that is what this is really what we require. So, of course, we require prema, but we require this. So Prabhupada's reply was to sing a Sanskrit verse from the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. Lord Brahma didn't say it, but it was perhaps Sukadev Goswami. He sang, Samasritam ye parapalava plavam mahatpadam punyaya shomarari Pavambudi vatsapadam parampadam padampadam yad vipadam natesham. That for one who takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which means his service, but really takes shelter of it, that is the sharanagati part, the surrendered part. That I am yours, and I am yours means you can do whatever you want to me. You can do whatever you want with me. You want to protect me? Protect me. You want to feed me? Feed me. You want to put me in a difficult position? You want to have me cursed by a Brahmin boy to die within 7 days? You want to have me cursed by Mother Parvati to become an asura? Nakutasjana bibhyati, no fear. Swaga, apavaga, narakeshu, apituyartadasana. They're the same. Parvati, after cursing Chitraketu, who was a Vidyadhara at that time, when she saw the response of Chitraketu Maharaj, that he said, I actually didn't do anything wrong. If this is what you want, okay. Sorry. I accept it. Lord Shiva pointed out, now you see the quality of the Lord's devotees? You see their quality? They are so fixed in the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet that they don't care about anything external at all. Just see how deep Sharanagati actually is. The external doesn't make any difference. It is not superficial. It is deep. It is deeper than the deepest. And then Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as Prabhupada explains in a purport, he explains why Krishna allowed this to happen, Chitraketu getting cursed, because not a blade of grass moves without Krishna's will. This is, if we remember this when we're in a difficult situation, our consciousness must change. If nothing else, we will become very humble when we realize that our devotion is very much on the surface. Not deep enough to control the mind's fear. Nakutasjana bibhyati. Like Chitraketu, Abhay Charan, Prabhupada. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains why Krishna allowed this to happen. And sometimes when we hear the explanation, or sometimes when something terrible happens to us, then 10 years later we understand that that was the greatest fortune. But you can't understand it at that time. And it was actually Krishna's mercy. And on the other hand, sometimes we think something wonderful has happened, and then 10 years later or 5 years later, we see that was the biggest curse of our life. But we don't know the future. But if we can have deep enough sharanagati to Krishna, we don't need to know the specifics of the future. We just need to know that we are Krishna's, and Krishna is ours, and we're in His hands. And His hands are very, very soft, and He's very kind, although sometimes He's very strict. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explained that Krishna, or the Lord of Vaikuntha, because Chitraketu had received the benediction of being a Vidyadhara, which meant an extremely long life, Krishna in Vaikuntha could not tolerate his separation. So he made a plan to bring him to him, to his lotus feet, sooner. With Parikit Maharaj, something similar, but there is a speciality that Prabhupada explains in one of the purports. There is a contradiction with Parikit Maharaj, because we saw in the first canto how Kali, what was Kali doing? Some terrible mischief to a cow and a bull. And this could not happen during the presence of Parikit Maharaj. It could not happen. Kali could not enter, even though Kali Yuga officially began after the Battle of Kurukshetra. It could not have any influence in the presence of Krishna, of Maharaj Parikit, because he was such a powerful Mahabhagavata, Vaishnava, ruler. Kali could not have influence. But there was a problem, because it was time for Kali Yuga to happen. Because there must be a gradual degradation in the different ages. So Kali Yuga had to happen, and Parikit Maharaj's presence could not allow it to happen. Contradiction. How did Krishna solve that? He took Parikit Maharaj and brought him back home, back to Godhead, in his own wonderful way. And at the same time, he allowed the Bhagavatam to be spoken, Puranarko Dhanoditaha, which arises like a sun to give light in Kali Yuga. Like the sun dispels darkness, the Bhagavatam dispels the ignorance. Jnana Dharma Dabisaha Kalo Nashta Visham Esha Puranarko Dhanadita. Like the sun, the Bhagavatam arises. It would be so nice if the devotees, even though so many of the devotees work or have school or something, if just at least read a little bit of the Bhagavatam very early in the morning. But not just read it in a mechanical way, but read it and think about it. Read it even if it's a small amount, but think about it deeply. And meditate upon it during the day. And try to apply what's being said. Try not to become fearful in a difficult circumstance. Try to take shelter of Krishna's names instead of the mind holding on to something that it shouldn't hold on to. Every day, if we could gain one jewel of realization deeply every day without fail, very soon our treasure chest will be full. But if we wait and say, well, tomorrow, today there's this problem, and then the next day there'll be another problem, and tomorrow I can't do this, and tomorrow I can't do this, and this, and this, and this, it never happens. The most difficult part of a journey is the first step.
Once you start moving,
you keep moving.
So Kunti Devi is going to demonstrate through her words and her actions an incredible principle. Because we've just heard her say that you saved us from this distress and that distress and this distress, as if being saved from distress was the essence of their relationship. As if that's Krishna's business, just saving his devotees from distress. And if he doesn't do that, according to our estimation, he's not fulfilling his part of the relationship. And there are so many, such a tendency, the materialistic heart, such a tendency to think like that. I've become a devotee. How come my stocks haven't gone up? Or I've become a devotee. How come, who knows what? You know, I got sick. Or my wife is angry with me. Or who knows what? But there's no conditions. It's easy to say, difficult to understand even, but still more difficult to do. A devotee doesn't put any conditions on his love for Krishna. He knows his business, and that is to serve Krishna. Why? Because it's natural, because Krishna is so beautiful, he's all attractive, ultimately because he loves Krishna. And he leaves any type of reciprocation from Krishna as accepting, leaves that to Krishna and accepts it at Krishna's mercy. There's an incredible verse in the Padyavali about Kurukshetra and how, and Srimati Radharani's mood, how, maybe I'll explain it simply. That's all I can explain it. But she says no, Krishna. Because Krishna was actually feeling bad. And he was laughing. He laughed when he first met the gopis there to lighten their mood. And he was feeling somewhat frightened, thinking that the gopis were thinking him ungrateful. Why? Because he left. When are you coming back, Krishna? Pasun. Just now coming. I'm coming tomorrow, or maybe the day after tomorrow. And it was years and years and years before Krishna saw the gopis again. And they had given everything to him. Everything. And he had been away for years, seemingly completely ungrateful. And he said, when he saw them, he laughed and he said, "You may be thinking me ungrateful. But we should know that the Supreme Controller, the Supreme Lord, he is the one who brings people apart and separates them again. Like cotton pieces in the air. Like clouds coming together. Like dust may come together. Like twigs or straw on the ocean may come together and be broken apart." And the gopi said, "You're such a clever speaker. Very good philosophy, except that you are the Supreme Lord. You're the one who's doing everything, and everyone knows that." And then Krishna said a verse that has several, many meanings. He said, yes, you accept me as the Supreme Lord, and that is correct. And then in a very simple way, Krishna said, and because of your love for me, because it's unflinching on this highest level, actually you have conquered me, he says. I'm paraphrasing it. You have won me because of your affection. So there's a verse in Padyavali that describes Krishna placing his feet, Krishna placing his head, trying to place his head at the feet of Srimati Radharani at this time, begging forgiveness, because when we hear about the separation of Srimati Radharani from Krishna, the only reason that she didn't die was because she was fearing that would hurt Krishna. And they would take some cooling ointments and put it on her body, the other gopis, and it would dry and turn to ash in the fire of her separation. So Krishna, feeling very, very embarrassed, he was trying to place his head at the feet of Srimati Radharani, and Srimati Radharani said, no, 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 why are you doing this, my lord? You are ours, you are our master, you are Swami, and whatever you do is perfectly correct. It is simply our misfortune and a sign of our lack of love that you have not come back to us. So, of course, the gopis, and of course, and most of all, Srimati Radharani is the highest pinnacle, Ladini Shakti Asmad, Radha Krishna Pranaya. This is not of this world. This is the highest thing. But from this, Krishna has shown these examples, allowed us to see these examples, so that the gopis can be glorified, and also we can see what love actually is. And we can examine our own consciousness and see how devoted we actually are to Krishna. And how much we have actually developed love for Krishna, and see how much we've actually placed Krishna in the center of our lives. Or is the standard for how much I'm going to give myself to Krishna what I get in return? And as soon as Krishna, I think that Krishna doesn't protect me, or I think that Krishna doesn't do what's best for me, or as if me with my little intelligence, and no matter how big our intelligence is, it can only be little, as if we can know or judge what happens as good or bad. Our perspective of good and bad is usually 5 years, 2 years, or if we're little children, 3 minutes. But Krishna's perspective is eternity. And if we changed our view, and I saw dealing with Prabhupada, he would not adopt a different platform from this, whoever he was dealing with. That this was the perspective that he was defining what is valuable and worthless. The scientists, what have they done? And we see so many wonderful things they've done.
But what have they done? Have they stopped disease and birth and death and old age? What have they done? And if they hadn't done that, they've done nothing. But another time, I heard Prabhupada, I heard it on a morning walk conversation, because Prabhupada would criticize the scientists and criticize the scientists and then criticize them more. And then one devotee, imitating the mood of Prabhupada, said, "Oh, the scientists, something superficial and nasty." And Prabhupada said, "No, we should give them credit for what they have done. But why do they have to say that there is no God?" Which was really at the heart of the whole issue that Prabhupada had with them. Why do they have to say? So arrogant, there is no... How can they say there is no God? How can they say that? Have they checked every hidden corner of the universe to see if in that place, through their inductive knowledge, that He's not there? So to think a part of reality, which we all... our perception of reality obviously isn't the totality of reality. So to accept the part as the whole is illusion. And that is what a conditioned soul does. And that is why we need Shastra. And that is why we want to measure ourselves against these high-grade devotees to see how much advancement still may need to come about. So Kunti Devi, not thinking that to be saved from distress is the great benediction of Krishna and the value of becoming a devotee of Krishna, which means, again, basically liberation, which has me at the center. I want to become liberated. This is a prisoner's conception of the best thing. He wants to get out of prison. It is vyatirek, the negative definition of... But what do you do when you get out? What is your life? You want to, when you're in prison, you're thinking, "I want to get out, I want to get out, I want to get out." But then one day the door opens and you're out, and then you have to do something. And that is the real life we should be longing for. So the devotee is thinking of the service he's going to do. And if you're thinking, "I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and Krishna, I'm going to do that," then you're automatically liberated. If you're acting in your natural position as a free man, you're automatically out of prison. So Kunti Devi, to put things in perspective, she says a very famous verse. Vipara santuta sasva tatra tatra jagat guru bhavato dasanam yatsyat apuna bhavadasana. Vipara means calamities. Padam padam yad vipadam natesham. Vipad. Calamities. Oh, I never even said what that verse meant, did I? If one who takes shelter of Krishna, this was Prabhupada's definition of surrender, when the devotees asked him, "What does surrender mean?" It means taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, taking shelter of the service of Krishna. Then the ocean of the material world, which is vast, unlimitedly vast, like the ocean, we cannot swim across it. It shrinks down in size to the size of Vatsapadam. Vatsapadam means... the calf's hoofprint, the size, the ocean shrinks to the size of a calf's hoofprint. And then you can step across with no trouble. This is surrender. To take shelter of Krishna's service, and automatically one crosses this bhava-sindhu,
the ocean of repeated birth and death. Because it's not a big thing. It automatically happens by Krishna's mercy. If we actually take shelter, we actually surrender, Krishna, I am yours. From this day forward, I am yours. I'm not even going to worry about my liberation. I am yours. I'm not going to worry about my liberation, because it's just another way of worrying about me. While that verse, padam padam yad vipadam, samasritam ye parapalava pavam, those who take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, they stop worrying about me, and just worry about Krishna, 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 and what will please Krishna. So Kunti Devi here, so that is what Prabhupada said surrender. And then after the devotees asked, what is surrender? He explained that verse, and he said, now do you understand? We should think about it. We should think about it and understand what surrender means in relationship to that verse. So vipada, calamities, shantu, let... This is what Kunti Devi describes after describing how Krishna saved her and her family again and again and again and again. And now she says, vipara shantu tashashvat. Let calamities happen again and again and again and again and again. Tatra, tatra, jagat guru. Let this happen again and again. What type of consciousness is this? She's glorifying Krishna for saving her from calamities. And then saying, let these calamities happen again and again. Bhavato darshanam yatsyat. Because if I am with you, if I have your darshan, then I won't have bhava darshan. I won't again automatically. If I am with you, there will be no question of birth and death, old age, disease, because I'll be with you. And this is the essence of Krishna consciousness. To be conscious of Krishna, to be with Krishna, automatically. No bhava darshanam. No more. It's over. It's over. The first time I saw Srila Prabhupada wasn't physically, but there was a television program, I think it was in 1967, and Prabhupada was on television with the devotees from San Francisco. It was the Les Crane Show. And I don't remember much of what it was like, but I remember that Malati Mataji was there with a little baby, and Guru Das Prabhu was there, But I don't remember so much about the devotees, but I remember there was one Mataji holding a little baby. And the interviewer, who was very, very hard usually on people he was interviewing, first thing he asked Prabhupada was, how old are you? And Prabhupada said, I am 70, this was in 67, so 71 or 72, and I still have all my teeth. And he went, And everyone, it was so disarming. What could you do when dealing with a person like Prabhupada? And he became very nice to Prabhupada. And he asked Prabhupada, are you liberated? And Prabhupada said, yes, and so are all my disciples. Just very, very simply. Because if someone is performing devotional service, is actually connected to Krishna, or really the connection was just holding on to Prabhupada, especially in those days, there was nothing else. As long as one was holding on tightly, then padam padam yad vipadam natesham. So Kunti Devi says, this is Prabhupada's translation, I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again. Because remember, Krishna is on the chariot. Now, after one calamity, after the next with the Pandavas, and at each moment, Krishna, each time, Krishna would be saving them again and again and again through the so many calamities, endless calamities and difficulties. And Krishna was always there for the Pandavas. And now, calamities finished. Kunti is the queen mother, Yudhisthira is the king, and now Krishna is on the chariot and ready to go. And Kunti Devi, it's clear to her, I'd rather have the calamities than not being with you. Now what is our consciousness? This we have to look and see. Sometimes we have to look ahead and see how far we have to go. And sometimes if we do that all the time, we might become too sad. So sometimes we have to look backwards and see how far we've come also. Balance. Here is Prabhupada's purport. Generally, the distressed, the needy, the intelligent, and the inquisitive, this is Prabhupada's paraphrasing Chatur Vidhaba Janta Imam from the Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter. Generally, the distressed, the needy, the intelligent, and the inquisitive who have performed some pious activities, they worship or begin to worship the Lord. Others who are thriving on misdeeds only, regardless of status, cannot approach the Supreme due to being misled by the illusory energy. Therefore, for a pious person, if there is some calamity, if there is some difficulty, if distress visits him, there is no other alternative than to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Constantly remembering the lotus feet of the Lord means preparing for liberation from birth and death. So if we read just a little bit, even if we read, that's one paragraph there. If we read a paragraph, maybe we read it three times or four times or five times and think about it deeply. A pious person, if there is some calamity, there is no other alternative than to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, calling out Krishna's names. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Any calamity, subtle, gross, there's one verse, perhaps in the Bhagavatam or perhaps somewhere else, that says that if you've committed offenses, or Jiva Goswami puts it in the frame of reference, if you've committed offenses, or if you want to develop love for Krishna, you should shamelessly chant Krishna's names loudly, day and night. And you will have love for Krishna soon. So for a devotee, there is no other alternative. Think about what that means. What's another way of saying that? No other alternative? Huh? The only way for it. There's no choice for him. He's committed. He's sold. He is the property of Krishna already, of Guru and Krishna. This is what it means to be a devotee. He's sold already. Krishna, I am yours. And as we heard that, could you say that in the sloka from Ramayana? About once. Yes. Once, sakrid, and I am yours. One time, says I am yours. I shall bestow upon him fearlessness. Krishna will accept that statement. We say, I am yours, and he says, you are mine. This is the vow I have taken. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami quotes this in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, Kamva Dayalam Sharanam Brijima, who is a more merciful Lord than this? And Prabhupada had that quality too. He did not forget service rendered. Even though there are so-called calamities, constantly remembering the lotus feet of the Lord means preparing for liberation from birth and death. Therefore, even though there are so-called calamities, they are welcome because they give us an opportunity to remember the Lord, which means liberation. So Prabhupada calls them so-called calamities. And another way of saying that, this is Krishna's mercy. Because otherwise we tend to get so attached. But all that we're attached to, it's hopeless. They're doomed. We have no relationship with them, the things that we become attached to. Beginning with this, it's going to turn into dust and ashes. We don't have a relationship with it. We move on. And this gets left behind. So if we become attached to something that's not ours, it causes us suffering. And what becomes attached to something? It's the mind. It's not the soul exactly. It's the mind. So how to turn that around is to make our attachment to Krishna strong. A committed attachment. I am yours, Krishna. And then even if we, due to weakness or this or that, Krishna, it's his vow that he'll take care of us. But, as Prabhupada said in an earlier purport, he knows our sincerity of purpose. We cannot trick him. We cannot say, from this moment on, I'm yours, Krishna. Okay, now, and you've taken a vow, so therefore, from this moment on, I won't keep my part of the bargain, but you have to keep your part of the bargain. You have to take care of me. No, Krishna knows this. We cannot fool Krishna. One who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are accepted as the most suitable boat for crossing the ocean of nescience. What does nescience mean? Darkness or ignorance. He can achieve liberation as easily as one leaps over the holes made by the hoofs of a calf. Samasvitam ye parapalava plavam. Such persons who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, they are meant to reside, to live in the Lord's abode, Goloka Vrindavan. And thus, they have nothing to do with this place where there is danger at every step. The material world is certified by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita as a dangerous place full of calamities. Less intelligent persons prepare plans to adjust the calamities without knowing that the nature of this place is itself full of calamities. They have no information of the abode of the Lord, which is full of bliss and without a trace of calamity. The duty of a sane person, therefore, is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities. We should read these things, think about it, see how we are able to do this, or see how we are not able to do it. If we are able to do it, to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, by taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, we are so fortunate. If we are unable to do it, and we recognize that we are unable to do it, we recognize that our minds go up and down and run from Krishna, and then run to Krishna, and then run away from Krishna. If we recognize that, we are fortunate also, because then we will become humble and then call out to Krishna with feeling. And that's the topic of the next verse. So if we think about these parts of Prabhupada's words here in the verses, only good can come of it. Only good could come of it. So if we can just read a little bit every day at least, only good can come of it. Otherwise the intelligence becomes dull. And then we think, we forget what bhakti actually is and why we're here and why we came and what's to be gained. We forget. We lose our perspective. Maya is very strong. And we could recognize the duty of the sane person is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances. So we can understand if we are unable to do that, we are not in touch with reality. We're imagining. That's why Prabhupada is saying a sane person will accept this. A sane person sees things as they really are. An insane person, he's imagining things and he's mistaking his imagination for reality. So we're imagining, anyone who imagines the material world to be anything other than vipada, a place of distress and calamities, is crazy. Because he's not in touch with reality, and that's the definition of a crazy person. So here's such important instructions. This is, Prabhupada is actually paraphrasing different essential verses of the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam. The duty of a sane person is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances, no matter what adjustment we make, they will happen. Suffering all sorts of unavoidable misfortunes, one should make progress in spiritual realization because that is the mission of human life. In other words, we should not spend our time trying to reverse the way that the material world functions and use our life in that way. That is insanity. It is arrogance. And it is doomed to failure. So Prabhupada would say, what have they done? What have they done? The spirit soul is transcendental to all material calamities. Therefore, the so-called calamities are called false. A man may see a tiger swallowing him in a dream, and he may cry for this calamity. Actually, there is no tiger, and there is no suffering. It is simply a case of dreams. In the same way, all calamities of life are said to be dreams. If someone is lucky enough to get in contact with the Lord by devotional service, it is all gain. contact with the Lord by any one of the 9 devotional services is always a forward step on the path going back to Godhead.
Okay. Thank you very much. Tomorrow, the first verse we'll read, Krishna willing, is one of my favorite verses, and that's the verse that we had the sheets with. And I have some of Prabhupada's words to play as we'll do that. They're very, very powerful. So if you have a sheet, if you would please return it, then it'll be easier, and I'll bring it tomorrow, and we can distribute them tomorrow, and we can read along as we hear Prabhupada's words. We'll also discuss in more detail about distress in Krishna consciousness and why Krishna gives it. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives distress even to his devotees. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has some very, very interesting comments on this. And he asks the question, he's all powerful. Why does he have to do this to his devotees to train them? Can't he think of another way? Instead of making those dear to him suffer? So there's some interesting questions and analysis raised by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. And Prabhupada's comments are, he'll speak in Mayapur, very, very powerful. Prabhupada's purport is so powerful. And I have a few interesting stories to tell. I'm Prabhupada dealing with some of the issues there. So, Krishna willing, tomorrow. Any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. First, Mahaprabhu, before Prabhu. Yes. Why shamelessly? I also thought about that, and then I realized that, say if I'm on a bus or something like that, usually I'll be too shy to chant out loud, because what will people think of me and things like that? What will people think if I'm walking down the street chanting or something like that loudly? So giving up all concepts of shyness and shame, lajja. I think the word lajja also means both, yes? We should just loudly, if we, at some stage of our life at least, we should loudly chant Krishna's names and never stop, regardless of what people think of us. They may think we're crazy, they may think we're saints, never mind, just chanting loudly. That's my understanding of what was meant by that.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, when you speak last 3-4 days, one thing many devotees also spoke, and we are saying that it not only contains the technical details and connections, plus also it is a devotion and attachment to Krishna, surrender. So, and also you mentioned in your class today you should read Bhagavatam at least little bit. Mm-hmm. So, since you have read for so long, so many years, and also practiced the realizations, we would like to hear how we should read Bhagavatam or approach Bhagavatam. And what is exact, sometimes you say that read little bit and contemplate, but then we also see there's so many volumes or books, sometimes we just see the bookshelf and wondering when you are going to read all these books. So some hints about how to approach read Bhagavatam.
Well, the first principle is to read it. So I wasn't saying everyone should only read a little bit every day and think about it, but at least a little bit, at least something, have this contact with Prabhupada, with the acharyas, at least. So there are so many points that can be made on this. One is that at least we should read a little bit every day. But it would be so nice if we have the facility to systematically study Prabhupada's books and let them deeply enter our consciousness. So they're our reference point as we lead our life. We refer to them and see how relevant Prabhupada's words are to our life. Assimilate them like that. So deeply think about it means to read it and read it and until it means something of deep significance to us. We have to enter into it, because sometimes we read superficially, it doesn't mean anything. Nothing sticks. So we want to read. It's better to read and assimilate something deeply and think about it. Do I really believe this is true? Have I seen any experience of this in my life? Have I seen it in others' lives? Are there any other Shastric points that are similar to this? Do I have any experience of this? Do I have any experience of the opposite? Do I have any questions? Do I understand it? And think deeply. What does this actually mean? Because we've seen, and we've heard it too, that if you read the Bhagavad Gita, you may read it so many times, or the Bhagavatam, and each time you'll get new lights of realization. So we want to take those, whatever realizations. We want the things that I just said, of ways to think about it, are ways to sort of stimulate realization. But this question that you asked me is such a good question to ask the other devotees. When you read Prabhupada's books, how do you read them so that it's deeply stimulating to you, that you get to maximize your realizations? It's such a good question to ask the other devotees, and if they so choose, they'll open their hearts and tell you. Or what realizations have you gotten recently? What have you been reading? The books primarily are for the devotees. If we make our relationships amongst the devotees based on, at least partially, based on sharing realizations, then our relationships become very intimate and deeply affectionate and respectful. Because when someone has a deep realization and they share it with you, and it's truly deep, then naturally you may like or dislike external parts of their personality, but you'll have such deep respect for them when you see that. And this is the foundation of proper relationships, respect. So it's or you see a devotee and say, what I read today? And you tell them. So I'm not able to deeply answer your question, but maybe some hints or some ideas are in there. Or I find that for me, if I have to give classes, then I'm forced to read in such a way that my reading it's so much less superficial, because people are going to ask me questions. And if it's superficial, I'll get bored, everyone else will get bored. And your approach to the Bhagavatam as a person, this is Prabhupada's book, so you approach it as Prabhupada, and you offer the right, you start with the right mood, and you think that this is Prabhupada speaking to me, what is he telling me? He says, so what does this mean? I just opened up anywhere. The first sentence, the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, is neither impersonal nor an inert object unable to reciprocate the feelings of his devotees. Now, when you hear that, in one sense, there's no new information in there, nothing that you don't know. But just listen to what Prabhupada says and see what he's saying and what the ramifications, the repercussions of this very extremely deep statement. He says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is neither impersonal nor an inert object. An inert object has no consciousness. So he's not impersonal. It's not that he has no consciousness. Or he's not an inert object, an impersonal, unable to reciprocate the feelings of his devotees. So immediately, you'll think, that means that Krishna can reciprocate with me. Reciprocate what with me? My feelings. What kind of feelings do I have? Well, then we see. Right now I'm feeling very unhappy. Right now I'm feeling very, very happy. Right now I'm feeling like I can't make any advancement. Right now I'm feeling like I'm not able to chant with any devotion. Right now, so then you take that. He's able to reciprocate the feelings. You realize, you understand what you're feeling. And then you take that to Krishna because he can reciprocate that. Oh, my dear Lord, I'm trying to be your devotee, trying to be a servant of your devotees, but I see myself so unfortunate that although you've given me such a nice facility, I have so much taste for the material world. I don't want this. And then you say, please help me. So you think deeply. We just took one sentence, and we know there's so many volumes, so imagine how many sentences are there. So even if you read one sentence and enter deeply into it and try to apply it and see what it means and what it means for you, you can reach perfection just with that one sentence. You follow what I mean? So he's able to reciprocate the feelings of the devotees. He is Suridam Svabhutanam. And not only can he reciprocate, he's with you. He's Surit, dear friend, heartfelt friend, so near in the heart. And he can reciprocate with you. Isn't that what we're all looking for? There's a tendency to become lonely. But if the Lord is right there and you can reciprocate with him all your feelings, you won't become lonely and you'll flourish in Krishna consciousness. He's not impersonal. Take it from the other side. I never reciprocate. I never tell him what's in my mind and I'm treating him as if he's impersonal and inert. And you can take that information and go deeply into that. He's not impersonal. That means he is personal. He's a person just like you're a person. What kind of a person? Find out what kind of a person he is. Person means he has characteristics, qualities, he likes, he doesn't like. Well, what does Krishna like? Well, think. What does he like? What category? He likes a specific type of food. So he's a person. He can reciprocate. He's not impersonal. Let me give him some food that he likes. Let me bring him a flower. He likes it. A tulsi leaf. And let me give it to him because simply he will like it. He's not inert. That means he can reciprocate. He has consciousness. He can move. He can have pastimes. He can touch you. He can hear you. So you can speak to him. When I was young, when I was very stubborn, not that I'm not stubborn, but when I was very stubborn, my mother used to say, talking to you is like talking to the wall. There must be a Hindi similar phrase or something like that. But talking to Krishna is not talking to the wall. He hears. So talk to him. He's not inert. He's conscious. One sentence. He's able. He's not an inert object, unable to reciprocate the feelings of his devotee. Just with one sentence we could talk and talk and talk and talk and get so many ideas of how to adjust our life, how to make progress, how to love Krishna, how to take a step to Krishna. One sentence. So that is why I said, at least a little we should read. But read it in a proper way, not superficially, in a deep way. And remember it during the day. Anytime there's difficulty, anytime there's happiness during the day, share it with Krishna. I am yours, Krishna. If we don't have a relationship with Krishna, how can we give ourselves to him and surrender? And then if there is no surrender, how could there be love? It's a little late. I think we should stop. But thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sri Radha Gopinath Bhaktivinoda ki jai.